Noon, folks. This is Nate Banks here with the Financial Hour with Nate Banks. This is my financial literacy program. And today, oh my goodness, I've never had a politician on my show before. But today, I actually have Dr. Laquan Hilton, who is the supervisor for the Dale District. And matter of fact, he has a lot to do with a lot of these districts in Chesterfield County. So if you live in Chesterfield County, you may want to take notes and listen in. And it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laquan Dixon. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
That's good. I'm so glad you're on my show. I really love to hear your journey, love to hear the things that you've done throughout your time in office and even before office. So just tell us about a little bit about yourself, Dr. Hilton.
So my name is Laquan Hilton, and I grew up in Martinsville, Virginia. I moved to Richmond in Chesterfield County in 1998, finished high school at Manchester, and went to Virginia State University for undergrad and got an MBA and went to VCU and got a PhD in public administration and public policy, and just been working in the community and helping out where I can.
So, all right. Yeah. Wow. I mean, your background is impressive. I mean, especially the educational background. You're a PhD. Where's your PhD from?
From Virginia Commonwealth University, the Wilder School there.
Okay. All right. So how did you get into politics? I mean, I know you took some courses. I mean, took some training and education and public information, public knowledge, public responsibilities. But how did you get to where you are today?
Well, I like to say it started when I growing up in Martinsville, Virginia. It's a very loving, caring place. And I think that my grandparents had a lot to do with where I am. My parents, my siblings, you know, they were really involved in the community. They really paid attention to what was going on. They really cared. And that was something that was instilled in me early on.
Okay.
So, you know, I can remember when Governor Wilder was going around and meeting people and campaigning. And my grandfather came to me, and I guess I was like maybe in second or third grade. And he's like, hey, this guy's going to be the first African-American governor. And you all really need to pay attention to it. And my grandfather took him around to all the different churches. My grandfather was a bishop in a Pentecostal church. And so I was like, wow, that's impactful, you know, and then understanding what the governor does, understanding what politicians do, the role that they play in everyday life. So that's kind of what kind of sparked it, I would say. And I really didn't realize that until probably a few months ago, because I never really thought that I would be where I am. You know, back in 2019, Mr. Holland asked me to sit on a planning commission in Chesterfield. And, you know, I took him up on that offer and we rewrote the zoning plan, the zoning policy for the county. We looked at cases. We made sure that the community was heard. And so that's kind of, I guess, what brought me to where I am right now is just listening to people and following God's plan. You know, as mentioned earlier, you know, my grandfather was a bishop in the Pentecostal church. My grandmother was a first lady in the church. And my other grandmother was a mother in the what they call the Printed Baptist church. And so really that faith piece has been big and has really directed my path. And so in January, I celebrated 35 years since my baptism. And, you know, that has been a really big part to just follow God's plan and God's purpose in my life. And so a lot of times we don't know how we get to where we are. We're just, you know, following his footsteps. One of the things that I often say is that the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. He delight every step that they make, that their fall should not be fatal. And that's my daily prayer. So that's where I am in life because of him.
Yeah. My daily prayer is Proverbs 3:5-6. He will order your steps, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're bringing a whole new meaning to that idea about separating church and state.
Yeah.
You know, which is affecting us every day, because right now in our schools, there's no prayer.
Right.
You know, at Christmas time, I was going around giving out candy, playing Santa Claus for some kids, and I had these little bookmarks that have Bible verses on it, and the principal said, no, you can't hand those out in the school. And I said, man, this is really serious. Yeah. But your whole background for what you just said tells me that you had a lot of things that came to you in your life that included church and state and the politics. Yeah. So, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, we got to believe in God. God is all powerful.
Yeah, he's everything.
He makes everything happen, you know. So he marked your steps, and here we are today.
Yeah. And I think it's a good point to say, you know, I've even with the snow coming in, I've gotten a lot of calls from seniors, and, you know, it's not something that we publicize, but we're connected to faith leaders, community leaders, people that want to do good in the community, and they let us know that, right? So mm-hmm. even like yesterday, I had a lady call me, elderly, lives on a hill, needed some help. And, you know, we realized that the government can't do it all mm-hmm. by themselves. Like, we need community partners. We need yep. community leaders to step up to help.
Yes.
And so I reached out to a pastor friend of mine and asked if he have anybody that could help.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah. So, you know, today her driveway is going to be clear. And, you know, it's the idea that we can't do it alone. We need those connections. And even though there is a wall of separation between church and state,
mm-hmm.
I think we still have to honor and value the relationships that exist within our community to help citizens in our efforts to help people. And
that's right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Understanding that there are some limitations, but there are some benefits that can mm-hmm. that can exist from it. So
yes, there are benefits, and I'm so glad that you're so well versed in all of these things in politics. It seemed like that started when you were younger, and I'm glad that you're bringing that out, because you know the community at large does not understand how politics works.
Right.
Not even in their own districts. You know, if they go out, people go out and vote, and they read everything the day they vote to figure out who they're going to vote for. You know, right. They don't know the background of folks. They don't know what they're voting for, how it's going to impact your communities, your schools, your fire departments, new construction. All of those things had to be figured out way before they come into existence. And so tell us a little bit about your role in that as the supervisor. I mean, I know there's a lot of things that come up for you having to do with budgets and how to figure out the correct spending that's going to help the community, and whether it's church or state, you have a big job on your hands. But tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when we talk about the budget, that's a year-long process that we go through. Mm-hmm. We're always analyzing the way we're spending money. One of the things I think really worked out, I know it's going to work out for our county, is at the end of the year, we realized last year that we had a surplus of about $3 million. And I want to give credit to my colleague, Jessica Snyder. She really wanted to have a domestic violence shelter set up for those in the community. And it costs right around $1.5 million to kind of get that off the ground. And so we were able to take some of the surplus money that we had
mm-hmm.
and shift it into a human service that is needed in our community.
Okay.
So that was one of the things I did as a newly appointed board member. I sat down with all my board members and asked them, hey, what are your priorities? They gave me their top 3-4 priorities. I also did it with Dominique Chatters, the Dell District representative for schools on the school board. So, you know, we were able to take care of her 3 priorities, which are my priorities. You know, one of them, she wanted digital signs outside of school. So we had some Title I schools that really couldn't afford it. The PTA had been working really hard to get it, mm-hmm. but just couldn't get it. And so, you know, just second meeting in, we gave over $400,000 to schools to get that done. She also wanted a Dell Elementary School and a pre-K site. What we realized is that the sooner we can get kids into school mm-hmm. at 3 and 4 years old,
yeah.
The better they do later in years in school in their mm-hmm. success rates. So we wanted to have a pre-K program. We have a waiting list. Numbers pulled in January was we had around 271 students on the waiting list in Chesterfield County. About 91 of those were from the Dell District. And so what we really wanted to do was get that elementary school and pre-K program off the ground. We had found land, county-owned land. And when we talk about the budget and spending responsibly, mm-hmm. you know, we looked first to see what the county already owned.
Right.
And we found a parcel of land that was going to be really good for it. And we were up $7.5 million on that project because we had set aside $7.5 million for land acquisition. And when we add that to what that wing would cost to do the pre-K program, it was right around $17 million. So that, you know, we're only $10 million
right.
gap wise to get a pre-K program in the Dell District. So really it's about communicating, you know, priorities. It's about looking at the budget. And that's one thing that I stress is just making sure that we're talking among the board members, that we're talking among the community members to really understand what the priorities are, not just in the Dell District, but all across the county. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that I advocate. So as we go through this budget cycle, we realize it's a year-long process that, you know, we may have surplus money here or there. We may have programs that maybe need emergency funding, such as our food bank. Our food bank has been experiencing a lot of people coming in asking for food with the federal government being shut down last year. So we needed to adjust some funding levels for them. So it's a year-long process. So things like that happen. Even a recent snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had school sites ready to house the unhoused. We had sites ready to house those who may lose power. So there's a lot of behind the scenes budgetary requirements that are, you know, going on mm-hmm. all throughout the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the things that we have to leave ourselves a little room. We can't spend everything that we're collecting.
Exactly.
We have to save ourselves a little room for those what I would call rainy day type of events mm-hmm. that we need to take care of citizens on. So I'm very thankful that we have very competent staff within Chesterfield County, that my colleagues understand that and that they've lived it. And so that's one thing that we hold as a value for us to take care of citizens.
Yeah, man. Big job there. How many districts are there in Chesterfield County?
So it's five districts. You have the Dell District, you have the Midlothian District, Clover Hill District, the Bermuda District, and the Matoaka District. So it's five.
It's five all across the county. Right. Chesterfield's a huge county too, man.
It is. It is.
I'm glad that your colleagues and everybody kind of work together to meet the goals and prepare for all the things that come up, especially those rainy day issues and homelessness and food deprivation. All of those things have to be dealt with throughout the county. And this is just one county.
I mean, right.
The whole state of Virginia has to be involved in all of that.
Right.
Well, listen, we got to take a break now. And this is really great information. I'm glad that people are listening to just to be enlightened and learn a little bit about your community and what's going on in the community. And most importantly, who are our leaders? Hopefully all of them are operating like you, Dr. Hilton.
Absolutely.
So this is Nate Banks, K101.2 Pop, and we're going to go on a break. We're back, folks. Okay, folks, we're back with Dr. Hilton, and my gosh, so much information, so much good information. So, Dr. Hilton, you told us about the five districts, but tell us about what you're doing and your goals for the Dell District specifically. What are you working on? What's your priorities? What's important to you in the Dell District?
Yeah, so I appreciate that question. So, you know, number one, I want to do a housing trust fund. And I want to focus on our employees in the county. We want to make sure that our employees can live within the county that they serve. So our teachers, our firefighters, our police officers, they don't have to travel too far to go home if they choose to. And so really working to set up a housing trust fund. I think Henrico has done a really good job with their housing trust fund. I'd like to see us do something very similar to that. That would be one of my priorities. And this is not in any particular order, but just overall. The other thing is Adele Elementary School. So right now, and I mentioned it earlier, we have around 91 students in Adele District, plus the idea that we have 271, that includes the 91 that I just previously mentioned. Mm-hmm. And those numbers were pulled earlier in January. They're on a waiting list for pre-K. Those are 3 and 4 year olds trying to get in school. Yeah. We want to make sure that we can get them into a pre-K program. And that's a side note too to the elementary school. So we have 67 instructional trailers that are used as classrooms in our district. And so if we can get our new Dell Elementary School, that would take us to 0 trailers in the county. Mm. In the Dell District for instructional use. Mm-hmm. Really pushing for that elementary school and pre-K site is one of my priorities. The General Assembly says that, hey, you all, in terms of local government, cannot say no to development because you don't have the infrastructure, right, such as public facilities like schools. So what we're trying to do is just keep up the pace in terms of development by making sure that we have the infrastructure in place. Just continuing that. The other thing is to make sure we have smart growth on Route 10. It's the last corridor to be developed. When I first came on to the Planning Commission, Mr. Holland said, hey, the Route 10 corridor is a good corridor to look at. He said, I want no more auto uses. I want, we don't want any more tire shops. He talked about he did not want any more fast food restaurants. He wanted sit-down restaurants. He wanted medical facilities. He wanted childcare facilities. So right now, we have 2 medical facilities that have basically broken ground on the corridor. We have another one that's proposed down near Swim RVA. So we'll have 3 medical facilities. We have, and also he said he wanted no self-storage because we have a lot of those on our bridge. But, I mean, they're filled. Yeah. They're filled to capacity when we checked. Mm-hmm. They have really no availability. But we're really aiming to have more sit-down restaurants. We want to have more child care facilities. I like to see a gym on the corridor. So really making sure that we have smart development on that corridor. Love to have a grocery store. My kids are bugging me about a Chick-fil-A. That's really, really where we got those ideas from was, one, Mr. Holland. But giving a lot of credit to him, when we did our corridor study, and I'll back up for a moment just because I want to highlight VCU and the Wilder School and some things that I think that are great that Dr. Gooden is doing, who's the dean of the school. Our staff said, hey, look, we don't have the capability to do a corridor study at this time. It'll probably be a year and a half before we can get to it. Mm. So what I suggested was that we go to the Wilder School, get a fellow. The Wilder School is a great place for people that want to get into planning, that want to do public administration, public policy type of work. And we went to them and we asked for a Wilder fellow. They gave us a fellow. She was amazing. She came in. She really listened to the community, did surveys, did community meetings, mm-hmm. in-person meetings, virtual meetings, took phone calls, online surveys, all kinds of stuff, right?
Right.
And what we found was that Mr. Holland was right. His finger was on the pulse of the community that they did not want any more self-storage, auto uses, any of that stuff. But what they wanted was sit-down restaurants. They wanted a grocery store. We lost Martin's, which was UCross before, which served as a sit-down restaurant, and it also served as a grocery store. So we needed to fill those gaps back into that corridor, into our community. And then citizens didn't want to travel to 360 and 60 to get medical treatment. So one of the things that we did was we tried to highlight those survey results in order for those type of businesses to come in. We were fortunate back in December, I went to testify in front of the Virginia Health Department that we need a CT scan capability at the ACA that's going to be on the corridor. And that was important. So really making sure that we have those that smart growth on the corridor. We know that the number of residential roofs will help with our commercial businesses that we're trying to recruit. And doing so, we know that we're going to have an elementary school. So it goes hand in hand. So just really thankful for the businesses that are coming to Courthouse Landing. We have a credit union, Virginia Credit Union is going to be there. We opened up Panera Bread there. We have a hotel that's coming. We have residential units that will be there, different housing types so people can live there. And it's really coming to fruition what Mr. Holland's vision was. So just continue to carry out his vision of the corridor is a high priority of mine. So those are my three priorities that I'm working towards. And I just ask citizens to stop and give me feedback on how it's looking, how it's going, because their feedback is critical.
Now, just to get the perspective, when you talk about the Route 10 corridor, are you talking about going eastbound towards, say, Jeff Davis Highway and beyond, or are you talking about, like, between that and back to the courthouse? I'm trying to just get an idea of where you're talking, focused on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Swim RVA, or right where the county line is, where the Dale District, Chesapeake County touches Richmond City, on the side where Iron Bridge is, from that area all the way down to Shoesmith is really the Dale District.
Okay,
and so we're really working with our friends in the Bermuda District also just to make sure that they have, the same type of amenities that we have further down on Iron Bridge, because it is, like I say, the last corridor. But we want to make sure that, like, the airport, we have the airport is in our district. Our airport is amazing. They have a good restaurant in there, King's Corner. So I want to highlight some of our businesses that are in the Dale District. We have the Uphall family. They're going to do a classic car aeronautical type of museum on the side of the museum on White Pine. So it's a lot of stuff going on that citizens are going to see, real soon. And we just want to continue that smart growth. On the corridor.
I really like that work that they did on Courthouse Road. Well, first of all, they've got the sheets. It's right there on the corner. But expanding that road out was fabulous. I mean, I love the fact that we can go down that street with a wider lane, and there's a lot of activities going on over there too, like the courthouse and the library. And so that was a really good expansion plan right there.
Yeah, and then we're going to do a punch through to Salem Church from there. So we had a community meeting back in January about that. So I believe we're headed in the right direction. We just really need citizens to be patient with us. Another thing I want to highlight is we're looking at doing some upgrades to we're looking to do some upgrades to the we're really looking to do some highlights and upgrades to the fairgrounds there. The fairgrounds is a place that we've used for July 4th. And so we have a plan to upgrade that area, make it more what the community wants to see, with some outside space for concerts, and we can still house the fair. So we're really looking forward.
We're back with Dr. Hilton, and I tell you, this gentleman has really made a lot of accomplishments since he's even been in office. But he's been in politics for a while. He's been helping the community for a while. And so tell us a little bit about your background, a little more about how did your background, growth, and development prepare you for the responsibilities and all the things you're doing today? How did that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to, you know, first to start by giving honor to my mom. You know, growing up in a single parent household, my dad was around, great guy, passed away in 2012, and really thankful for my siblings to step up and fill in the gaps. They're all way older than me. They'll probably get mad at me for saying that, but they're in their, you know, 50s and 60s, and one of them is in their 70s. But you know, they were around me growing up. They really gave me a mature version of what life was like, because they were so older than me. They were always telling me, like, hey, we're not your parents, we're your siblings, so if you need us, call us. And that's something that still stands today. So very grateful for them. And grateful for my mom. You know, when we talk about in the county setting priorities through our budget process, you know, I often think back to my mom got her tax return check, I guess, and I was maybe about 7 years old, and she said, hey, you know, we can get central AC put in the house, or we can go to Disney for a week. What do you want to do? And I was like, central AC, because it had a lasting impact. It was the greatest good. Right. And so as we go through our budget process, those are the things that I think about. What is going to provide the greatest good to the greatest number?
Right.
And so I'm thankful for that lesson that my mom taught me. You know, one of the things I think about too is, you know, our schools roughly have about 46-47% of our budget. Mm-hmm. And I just think back to my grandmother, and I remember being 5 years old. She was like one of the ladies. If anybody has seen the movie The Help, she was like one of the ladies from The Help. Mm-hmm. And she came in one day, and I don't know what happened at work, but she was really upset, and she grabbed me, and, you know, 5 year old kid in the middle of the summer, and she said, I want you to go to school, get a good education so you can wear a white shirt to work every day. and that's really what I want for our kids. Not saying that they have to be in corporate America, but they want to be a plumber, if they want to be a welder, if they want to be a mechanic, they want to be a cook. If they want to go to college and, you know, go further after undergrad, I want them to have every opportunity to be successful. And so that's why, you know, I have a major focus on education, and I'm a product of Chesapeake County Schools. I know what public schools really mean to people. And I want to make sure that our schools are funded properly, that they have the tools that they need, to be successful for our kids. And so those are the type of things that I think about. And I also think about going to, Virginia State University, and my mom as a single parent, you know, we weighed going to different schools and different opportunities. And, you know, she told me, she said, hey, why don't you go to Virginia State? It's cheaper. And they have a good education, program there. Mm-hmm. So I was in the School of Business. I went with six goals. You know, I wanted to graduate within 3 to 3.5 years. I wanted to graduate debt free. I wanted to get commissioned into the Army. I wanted to bring the NAACP back on campus because they had gotten kicked off. I wanted to pledge Alpha. And I think that it was six goals that I had. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, goal setting is really big. And that was something that my mom instilled in me early on. She read a study one day, I think it was put out by Harvard, and said that, you know, those who write down their goals are more likely to achieve them. So she made me write out my goals. And so I was very grateful for the upbringing that my mom gave me, and that the community and my family put me through, in order to really understand how to set priorities. And that's something that we do every day in Chesterfield, is setting priorities. You know, one thing that I would say is that, you know, we have a budget process. We have budget town halls beginning in March 12th through the 24th. We'll start having our budget town halls. The budget will be put on the website on February 19th. And so we're really working to make sure that we have all the input from citizens, because we don't have all the Yeah. We don't have we try to do everything we can, uh-huh. but citizens come up and they have other information that, you know, makes us change our priorities, you know, so we have to make sure that we're being open and mindful of citizens. The Dell town hall for the budget is going to be March 16th. It's going to be at the Beulah Rec Center from 6:30 into 8 p.m. Uh-huh. One of the things, you know, Mr. Holland told me, I went through a few of these budget meetings with him. And one of the things he leaned over and told me at the first budget meeting that I went to, he said, you can really tell what's important to a locality based on what they fund. And so as we look at Chesapeake County and what we fund, we want to make sure that, you know, we have the greatest good for the greatest number and that we have high impact for our citizens.
That's so. Right. Absolutely. And that's so powerful. You know, hearing you talk, I wish all politicians were as engaged and thought about the community and the people that voted for them as well as you do, because you really have a genuine desire to change things. You're a change agent. Thank you. And we need that, especially when it comes to schools, education. When you start talking about building more schools and building more residential housing, you got to take all those other things in consideration. Like, well, how many firehouses do you need? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're building more public housing or more housing in general, how many libraries do you need? I mean, all of those things have to go in this planning. And seems like you're the guy that's equipped for the job. I'm so glad that you are. It seems like that also Mr. Holland had a great influence on you too as well.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, I think he recommended you for this job, right?
He did. So, you know, he as I look back, I think he was training me the entire time, you know, different things he was saying and things that he told me and things he let me see, you know, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I heard a quote the other day. It said that your life is not judged by what you achieve, but for what other people achieve because of you. And, you know, so every day, just waking up and thankful for people like Mr. Holland who have helped me get to where I am. And then also trying to help the next generation is important because, you know, we don't own the seats. These seats are just worn by us, you know, for the next generation to come in. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make sure that we sow into other people. Mm-hmm. So I'm just grateful for Mr. Holland and everything that he did and just to be able to stand on his shoulders. And I'd be remiss not to mention Ms. Holland because, I mean, they are a power couple. She is equally amazing, you know, not so much in the public eye as Mr. Holland was, but she spent a career teaching at Meadowbrook High School, and she continues to advocate. You know, she's an amazing woman, so I would be remiss if I didn't mention her and their children, Matthew and Jessica. Mm-hmm. They've raised some really amazing kids, and I'm just grateful to know the family and to walk in the footsteps of them.
Okay. Well, you know, in my mission and in my growth and development, I preach and practice teaching generational wealth.
Yeah.
And you're doing the same thing in another vein. You're teaching generational growth and development. And that's important for all families to think about, as well as for the people who are in office, the elected people that we put in office to help us to develop the younger generations and the generations to come. Because they're going to be around when we're dust.
Yeah.
And so we need to remember that we need to leave a legacy so that people can grow and develop and learn how to make their community better, make their children better, and just carry on the mission, which is what we're supposed to do in the community anyway. We're all here supposed to help one another and to make sure that we can strive and help other people to thrive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really appreciate you giving all this information to us and sharing how you feel about your job and your duties and, you know, what your mission really is. And to have good people around you is important to accomplish those goals. And I'm pretty sure that you've got a team of folks that really see the same mission and values that you have. Yeah. And that probably makes your job a lot simpler, but it still takes that leadership role to keep it moving. You know, so I'm glad that you have these visions. I'm really impressed with what you've accomplished in your lifetime. you give credit to your mother and your grandmother and God and church and Mr. Holland. You know, that's what it's all about. Yeah. You know, we're not in this battle by ourselves. No man is an island.
Right.
So, you know, gather all your resources and let's be prepared to do battle, because there's a lot of things out there that keep us handicapped and could keep us deprived of our dreams. And we don't want that. We want our children to feel encouraged, have confidence. And it takes a village to raise a child. Well, we got a lot of schools and we have a lot of people in these schools that have our kids, you know, all day long. And but they need the buildings, they need the fundings, and they need to have things. You know, I was impressed. I went to an elementary school, Fairfield Court Elementary School. I go there, it's my civic responsibility. I do this. I go in and read to the kindergarten kids first Friday. And when I walked into school, the thing that impressed me was there was a vending machine sitting in the lobby. And I walked by there thinking, oh, they got chips and pretzels and candy and stuff. And guess what was in the vending machine?
What?
Books.
Yeah.
And the kids can earn tokens to get the books. And the city of Richmond replaces the books. When the book is depleted, they replace that book or another book like it. So I was impressed with that. And that just shows the kind of people that we have out here educating our children, that they're trying to change the mindset of young kids coming up today.
Yeah. You spoke about legacy. And so one of the things that that come to mind when you talk about legacy is I'm a member of a group called Ujima Legacy Fund. Mm-hmm. And so it's a group of African-American men that help within the Richmond region. We actually help fund nonprofits. So it's it's a collective giving circle. Membership is $1,100 on an annual basis. We pull those resources together and then give grants to nonprofits that are in need. And so it was founded in 2013. We started an endowment 3 years ago. We found a match for $100,000 for 3 years. Mm. And so we have an endowment in excess of $800,000, which will enable us to give $40,000 in perpetuity to nonprofits. Okay. in the community that help out. You know, our focus area is after school and out of school time programs, mentoring, legacy, college preparation, career development, entrepreneurship. You mentioned financial literacy. We do a lot of help with financial literacy through nonprofits, helping them, funding them so they can provide that financial literacy to the African American community. Mm-hmm. Technology and training, tutoring, and youth sports. One of the things that was really important for me to see early on with the group was we had Swim RVA come and they submitted for a grant. We were able to give them $20,000 to teach inner city African American kids how to swim. And we know that during segregation times, in our African American communities, our pools were concreted over. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole generation of African Americans that can't swim.
Yep.
So my parents, they made sure that I could swim.
Mine too.
Right, absolutely. And so we wanted to make sure that they had the funding there to help other African American kids. So we gave $20,000 to Swim RVA a few years ago in order for them to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to highlight that organization that I'm a member of and very thankful, because as we talk about government and all the things that government does, is some things that government can't do. And that's we need true. Community partners such as Swim RVA, such as Ujima Legacy Fund. We need those organizations to fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. So we're very thankful for those organizations and as many others that we could name. Uh-huh. But we're just grateful for the organizations that stand in the gap between what citizens need and what the community sees that they can do, mm-hmm. and what the county and state and federal government can do. So we're just very thankful for those organizations.
Well, I got to say that we are very thankful for you, Dr. Hilton. And, you know, again, let me just say, this is Nate Banks with the Financial Hour on Internet Radio 101.2 Pop Culture Mix Radio. Spend the weekend with us. And just in case you want to get in touch with me, my number is 443-744-2316. Call me up if you need some information on financial literacy or maybe if you just want to get in touch with some people in the community that I know that I can reach out to, because I'm here to help as well. And Dr. Hilton, thank you. You've been a great asset to the show today. I know you have a busy schedule, but I appreciate you stopping by and just sharing some information about you and what you do. And hopefully folks will keep following you and watch what you do and give you some information about how they feel about what you can do to help improve the community.
Thank you.
All right.